Hello and welcome to the Thing I Love Most show. And obviously the thing that we do love most is being a Yeard, being a Spurs fan. And this week I'm joined by two Lees. And we have Lee in the studio, Lee Curtin, who I'm going to refer to you as for today, Middlesex Lee.
No problem.
And we have Hackney Lee, who is now residing in Dorset, one of the founder members of the Dorset Tottenham Supporters Group, which is how we managed to find you because you've been posting some good videos online. How are we doing, Hackney Lee?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Just wanted to catch up quickly with you about how you founded the Dorset Spurs Supporters Group.
Okay, so I've got to be absolutely honest. South Dorset Spurs has been going on for about 10 years. So I wasn't involved in it from the very start. That's a guy called Tony Bayliss and Bob Savage. Those guys have been running it for a while out of Weymouth. I got into it via a friend, but those guys are brilliant. You know, they get up right early in the morning and drive us all the way up to Wembley at the moment. And so those guys have been going for about 10 years now. So a lot of Tottenham supporters down this area.
Great. And so you're still a season ticket holder, or you go to as many games as you can?
Yeah, I'm lucky enough to be a season ticket holder now. Took a long time to get one, but I managed to get one last season because of the move to Wembley. So I've renewed again this year with the expectation of going to the new ground, obviously.
How's that working out for you?
I've been going off and on for years, you know, family and that get in the way. So, you know, having kids and that, they're a pain, aren't they?
Yep.
So it's time to talk about, firstly, the Inter Milan away match last week, the 2-1 defeat. So let's cast our minds back. It feels weird now talking about a match that was nearly a week old. It was a better performance. Couldn't have been much worse than the Liverpool result, because obviously that was just absolutely shocking, one of the worst performances I can remember in the past 3 or 4 years. Performance was better. Obviously, the negatives were losing. The last 10 minutes, the way we conceded the goals, and also, obviously, the fact it was another set-piece goal we conceded. And maybe even Poch's substitutions. Give your general sort of...
Yeah, for me, I think people questioned Poch's substitutions at that point. I don't think... there wasn't too much wrong with them, as far as I could see. We just didn't shut out the game the way we should have shut out the game. When you're away from home, you can't... The goal he scored, the first goal, for me, it's just sometimes you hold your hands up and go, top draw. If you want to be overly critical, you say, why is he on the edge of your box, totally unmarked?
Yep.
But I think sometimes you hold your hands up and go, hell of a strike, great goal, and you take that on the chin. For the next 5 minutes, you close out the game. The way we conceded that last goal was just individual errors. And I've watched it 7 or 8 times. Because we keep conceding from set pieces, because we keep conceding from these balls coming in, I'm trying to find, rather than just jump on the bandwagon, I, for one, am trying to find a little bit of a trend. And that was nothing more than Aurier losing his man and just choosing not to track him. And you can't always teach that. You know, you can hammer it home and time, but in the heat of the battle, it's that extra bit of class where a player, you know, maybe not doing anything with his feet as such, except for just tracking his man. And all he had to do was actually follow his man back in.
But it was the second ball, wasn't it?
Again, it was the second ball.
That's the thing. You sort of, he did mark him from the corner, but then when it was cleared slightly, then it was just like he just went wandering out. He was just
left him and his man's gone back in behind him. And, you know, you could then look at the goalkeeper and go, well, does he come and claim it because it was a second ball, it's looped back in. It was in around a 6-yard box. He could have claimed that, but that's just bad discipline for me. It wasn't really the substitutions at that point. It was the personnel on the pitch should have been professional enough to see that out. Don't stop the first one, fine. Let's take a point from Inter and go home.
I think the only thing with the substitutions would be that in terms of the flow of the game, if you do try and maybe go defensive, it can sometimes be looked upon as you're sort of asking for them to come on against you. You know, if you did have Kane still on there, who would maybe have held the ball up a little bit better. They might have maintained possession. And also, if you do bring on a midfielder for an attacking player, then sometimes you're giving that sort of...
just you do give up the yardage. Yeah. If you do, you make those substitutions, you give up the yardage. But you give up the yardage because you're putting on people who are expected to be able to do the job better. You know, if I put a midfielder on instead of Harry Kane, it's because I believe that midfielder's got... he's got higher work levels. Mm-hmm. He can tackle slightly better. Yeah. He can position himself better. If I bring on a defender instead of a midfielder, it's because he can defend better. It's because he can clear high balls. It's because he makes the right decisions in turning the other team around. So, you know, people can criticise it as much as you want, but there is, you know, there's arguments to be had with it. And the players put on were put on to see out a job and do a job. And the first goal, you know, we go back to it, yeah, hell of a strike. But the second one shouldn't happen for me. I don't care who's on the pitch, it shouldn't happen.
Hackney Lee, what are your thoughts on the intermatch?
Yeah, I watched the game and I was, before it started, I was thinking, you know, if we take a draw out of here, I'll be quite happy with that, especially coming off the back of the Watford game and that. And when we went ahead, I was like, nah, this is, you know, that's it. Sometimes you've got to win ugly and get a result out of nothing. And for me, I thought that was it, you know. When that won the goal went in, I took me out off to him. I went, that's that. Jeez, that, what a goal. You can't stop them, you know. And I sat there, I was with my boy, and we were watching it, and I was like, this don't look good. It looks like we're going to concede again here. And I just couldn't get it. I just couldn't understand why they didn't start playing a bit ugly, you know, slowing it down, falling over, all that kind of stuff that you do if you really want to see the game out. And for me, that's where we let it down. I Vorm as well, he's got no command in the penalty area, and he never kind of, to me, the defenders don't trust him, and so he never came out to claim anything or to, you know, tell them where he wanted them or anything like that. And for me, I think that's where it kind of went. Everyone was kind of, is he coming? Ain't he coming? Who's going to pick this up? You know, and then you walk away with a 2-1 defeat, and it's gutting, absolutely gutting.
Does he come for that second goal, Lee, in your opinion?
Well, I don't know. I'm not a football expert. I can't really say who should do what, you know. But for me, I just think his overall command of the area, if he's more commanding in the area, then the defenders then know what's expected of them. And I just felt like there's a lot of uncertainty around there. You know, should someone have come and smashed it away, or should he come and punched it out or whatever? But for me, we shouldn't have been in that position in the first place. We should have been slowing the game down and said, well, let's see it out for a point.
Yeah, I think obviously with Lloris, they've played together for so many years. There's a solidity, and there's also just a comfort in knowing that he is better at doing that. And I suppose they're used to playing with each other. So it does make sense for them to maybe not have as much faith or confidence in Vorm, and maybe that's not one of his strengths. It's a difficult one. Okay, all right. Well, we won't dwell on the defeat, because then we moved on to an amazing 3 points. I mean, look at his face. He's still buzzing.
It's just nice to win again.
It was nice to win again. Although still some of the Spurs groups, I'm seeing negativity about it. I mean, I'm just... Anyway, we're not going to go into that, but I really wonder about Spurs supporters and their sort of like, I mean, supporters in general, I suppose. It's the whole social media thing. People seem so quick to just get on the negative bandwagon. Even if there's nothing there, they will pick up on it for their own, you know, keyboard warrior sort of like high-fiving. It's just crazy. And I know, Lee, Hackney Lee, that was one of the reasons why you sort of posted your video that went quite viral was with a view to that, wasn't it? About the fact that people were moaning for no reason, and they maybe, you know, had nothing to moan about, but it was just because of the fact that they wanted notoriety and, you know, just to get themselves known.
The thing with people on social media nowadays is there is a sense of entitlement, that everyone believes that their team is entitled to beat another team just because of who they are. And they'll pick up on everything. They get a game of FIFA and they think they know everything about football management, you know. And these guys, you know, Pochettino's paid a lot of money to do what he does. And he got that job on merit, you know. And I just think, you know, I used to go football because I used to like to meet up with my mates, have a few beers, sing a few songs, you know, and hopefully see my team win. You know, nowadays, it's like... what can I moan about next, you know? And we've got to remember that football is just about opinions, right? So don't matter what you think or don't matter what I think. Ultimately, you know, we're all going to see the game differently. So, you know, for me, I just think people were too quick to jump on the bandwagon and start moaning about everything that's negative in the world. You know, we've got a lot to be grateful for. You know, we've seen some crap football under George Graham and Christian Gross and all those kind of people. You know, for me, now, you know, we've got a good team. You know, it's not the greatest team, but it's a good team that's challenging and hopefully going to bring home some silverware at some point. And we've got a great stadium to go to when we go there. But anyone who's had an extension built will know you're never going to get it done at the time you expect to get it done.
Very true. So, I mean, obviously the performance was again better against Brighton. We looked more commanding. It wasn't faultless by any means, but there was the, for me, I thought that the thing that really I liked was the fact that we were statistically better in terms of our attacking play. Yeah. You know, in the past few games, our shots on target account has been really, really low. Yeah. And they just don't seem to have been able to really get that final pass or just... There has been no real sort of like attacking threat. But obviously now it seems to have changed against Brighton. And Kane, dare I say, looked a bit brighter?
Well, I think our decision-making was better. I think we had a better shape to us. And I think part of Kane's doing is we had a conversation previously and I was saying that Kane probably doesn't get the credit of the work that he does off the ball when he's coming deep. And one of the other games where he pulled himself out to the left and he's pulling himself out to the right, which opened up lots of space for Moura. Mm-hmm. Moura bagged a couple of goals. Everybody was on the Moura bandwagon. And the other bandwagon was Hammer Kane because he's not getting goals. Even though he scored two in August, which he's never done before. Even though he's only one short of where he was this time last season. So kind of people go on about it. But what I did notice, what I found was on Saturday, was that Moura was wider. Mm-hmm. And Kane was given more space in the middle of the park this time. And he kind of picked up positions that Kane picked up last season. And although he's quite wasteful and wasn't as clinical, he put himself in those positions that he was getting into more regularly last year. And I don't think part of the reason he was getting in those positions earlier was because of where Moura was on the pitch. So it's trying to find the right combination. I think there's a combination there to be had. It's where Moura picks up the ball or where he positions himself that allows Kane to do bits. So
it was more a 4-2-3-1 as opposed to, because I think against Man U, it was almost like they were playing two up.
Yeah, they almost played off him. You know, they swapped places at one point. Mm. So Kane led the line, Moura dropped in, then Kane went in here flicking balls on for Moura to run onto. This time, Moura's out wide, where I think he can do damage. I think he can do damage almost... Mo Salah style, Eden Hazard style. I think he can play out wider and come in and affect the game that way, which also then enables Kane to be our focal point. We don't want Kane back trekking around the midfield. Mm. You want him at the end. You want him as end product. So, you know, yeah, he scored. Yeah, he had three other chances that we would have liked him to put away, but that hasn't been there in the previous game. So I'm going to take the positive from that.
Absolutely.
And say that's, you know, him getting back into where we want to see him.
Yeah, Hackney Lee, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I love Kane. I think he's a great player. And wherever he's on the pitch, you know there's an opportunity. He's not been firing on all cylinders. But then, you know, if you look at previous seasons, he's usually gets off to a slow start in August. So maybe he's had a couple in there and he's doing it a bit of the other way around. I don't know. But I think there's so many talented players at the front of our team now that really we shouldn't just be relying on him. You know, Moura is more than capable. Son is more than capable. Lamella has now shown that he's capable. And that's without taking in Ali and Eriksen. So, I mean, you know, that front sort of half a dozen players is, you know, it's frightening, really. I think we've got a good attacking force there. It's just whether they can get the right mix and get off to the right start.
Well, that actually leads me quite nicely on to our next question, actually, because it was firstly a question of Eric Dier, because he has been sort of one that people are talking about recently. Quite a lot of fans are being quite negative about him, calling him a scapegoat and saying that he shouldn't be included in the team. I thought his performance was better. So the first question really is, do we think that he should be in our first team? And then secondly, what our first 11 should be at the moment with regards to the fact that we have quite a lot of these attacking players now, as in you just mentioned, who could fit into our first 11. Obviously, last season, Moura wasn't really featured, but now he seems to be like one of the first names on the team sheet, which means that you would have to leave out a Son or a Lamella or an Ali or an Eriksen. So it's an interesting conundrum for Poch, a great position to be in terms of to have these attacking options. So firstly, let's start on the Dier situation. Are you a fan of Eric Dier? Do you think he brings something to the team?
I've always been a Dier fan. I think he does a lot for the team that kind of gets unseen. You know, he puts himself about, he does break up play and stuff like that. He's not having a great time at the moment. You know, I can see that. And then you've got Wanyama there. And I think, well, you know, Pochettino, he watches them in training each day. So he must know, you know, how they're playing or whatever. But he's a great believer in keeping faith with players, which I like, because that gives them faith in him. You know, it's like being loyal, you know, getting them to play through that bad period. But, you know, I personally don't think Dier's been as bad as people are making him out to. I think everyone just loves to have someone to moan about. He's just the latest Sissoko or what's the other, Serge Aurier, you know, for me.
Yeah, I agree with you there, Lee, to be honest. I think he's been no worse than anybody else. And I think the game where people chose to kind of get on his back was the Liverpool game. But when we looked at that, you know, there were stats going about, and I think we gave away possession 112 times. But some of the passing on his part was very obvious and very sloppy. So I think he is one of those. It's if there's no Sissoko in the team, there's no Aurier in the team, the rest seem to be likeable characters, so they want to have a pop at somebody else, and at the moment it appears to be Dier. I just think he's almost a victim as well of his own versatility. You know, you go back and I look at somebody like James Milner, and as boring as he is, you look at the positions that he's played for his team, without being hugely effective at times, just goes in, does the job, you know, but he's almost made a career out of it. You know, whether it be left midfield, left back, centre midfield, right midfield, right back. Sometimes that's to the detriment of the player, you know, because Dier is quite young as well. What is he, 24?
Something like that.
You know, does he want to be a centre back? Does he want to be a holding centre midfielder? You know, where does he view his best position? Is it the same as where Pop views his best position? We don't know that. Maybe he's more comfortable playing as a centre back. So sometimes his own versatility is probably what undoes him. So where he turns up and he's given us a 7 out of 10 every week, and we as fans don't really understand that, and we're looking for a 9 out of 10, or, you know, we want him to be better in that position, that might not be, you know, that might not be what he's there for on that particular day.
So would he be in your first 11? Who's your first 11? And is Wanyama or Winks in it?
Well, here's the other thing, right? Because I know people are going to want to swap Dier, Winks and Wanyama around. As Lee alludes to there, in training, Pock sees something in training. I felt we rushed Wanyama back too early last season and he broke down again. Are we just being very cautious with him? Dier's fit, all right, his form ain't great, but I don't think that's just down to him. Winks has just come back from an injury, so why are we rushing these guys back when we're already short on numbers? And, you know, we've got a long season ahead of us. We're hoping to get through to January and hopefully pull out our checkbook and hopefully improve the squad. But at the moment, as it is, I think Dier's playing, you know, and the more you play, as Lee alludes to, you play yourself into a bit of form. We don't always like it. I'm not always a massive fan of that way. But I get why we're doing it if we've had two players in a similar position who are trying to come back from injury, who both broke down again last year. So maybe Dier wouldn't make the first 11 once everybody's fit. So
I do quite like that about Poch, the fact he doesn't just drop players when they're not performing. And I think that does show loyalty, and I think players do appreciate that. And it happened with Eriksen and Ali last season. And, you know, just because they went through little barren patches and they were almost the scapegoats again, people were calling for their heads, but he doesn't do that. And I think that's good. I do think that, and the players do value that in him.
Yeah.
So moving up towards the sort of attacking area in the pitch then, who would be your sort of chosen first four, as it were, if we're going to play 4-2-3-1?
I think he's got to be. I think he's got to be based on form, who's playing well. But I don't think you can leave I don't think you can leave Harry Kane out. I think Harry Kane has to play whenever he's available. I think Son is coming back, so I think I would stick with Moura and Ali. I would have him there for sure. I think the other one with Lamella now sort of getting on the score sheet, it's a real conundrum, to be honest with you. I think you'd have to see where they are to see what's happening. It's real early days in terms of games. You know, we've had like, you know, five games, and no one's really had a real good run out yet. We haven't hit any real form. There's just too much choice for me.
Mm. But it's a good thing for him. It's a good position for him to be in. We haven't had that for a while, where we could have said, you know, there's two players who are actual potent attacking options that we can bring off the bench. Fair enough, they're not striking options, which obviously is a bugbear of a lot of people, and it's annoying. But still, if you can have a Son and a Lamella to come on and change a game from the bench, then that is a good position to be in.
I think Son, not Son, Lamella and Moura are very direct. You know, so if you're in a, depending on what position you're in, you know, those are the guys you can bring on that will push it on if you really need to be going for it. So I think they're good options off the bench. I'd like to see more of Lamella, to be honest with you, because, you know, he was out for all that time with his so-called hip injury. So, you know, it'd be good to actually see him banging a few in, you know, and earning his coin, you know.
So finally, just touching on the Gazzaniga performance, how did you think he did on Saturday against Brighton?
Well, he got all the Yedets all in a flash, didn't he? I saw someone wrote a minge twinge, which I thought was a really good saying. I've never heard that one before.
Oh, wow.
Even being an old fella that I am. But, I think, you know, if he's commanding, if he's a bit more commanding, and that's what I kind of get from him, is that he's a bit more getting out there and coming for the ball and stuff. Because if you look at the way we play with Lloris, he always comes out, he's using his feet, he's quick off his line of that. Vorm's always really stuck on his line of kind of, you know. So if Gazzaniga, he's between the two, isn't he? So, you know, he can only learn. I think Vorm's always been the understudy. I'm never gonna take this position. Whereas with this other guy, you know, really, he's maybe he should be saying to himself, well, this is my opportunity. Can I keep him out of the team? You know, and put that bit of pressure on. I'm not saying he should be out of the team, don't get me wrong, but what I'm saying is he needs a bit of competition, and we need to see something that's going to come after, you know, and Vorm's never going to be that person, is he? So.
Yeah, I think that's quite a fair summary as well, because they say Lloris is the sweeper keeper, so he lights them up around the 18-yard box and he can come out and clear, you know, behind them. From what I've seen of Vorm, and where we got Vorm as well, and having a look at Fabianski as well, when they both at Swansea, they're predominantly shot stoppers.
Mm.
You know, I know goalkeepers serve a purpose. That he's shot stop. You can't criticise his shot stopping. But at the same time, we don't give up as many long range shots as those other clubs did. So we need a more competent keeper around the box. And Gazzaniga, even against last season, was it Palace? He made his debut last season.
So.
Even then, he showed that the 6-yard box was his. Mm. And in the dying embers of the game at Brighton, there was a cross came in. And I think it was like everyone just going, here we go again, another set piece. But he came out, edge of the 6-yard box, took the ball, and it just takes all the pressure off. And it's just different. Rather than waiting to try and save the shot, he comes out and he gives us that little bit of. We just worry less, I think, and you can see the guys worried less, I think, what was going on behind them on Saturday evening, because that will be his style. They would have played with him, they would have trained with him, and it's not a massive criticism to Vorm. I think there's other games where he's done well for us, and like I said, Liverpool, it was a funny day for everybody, and he made some good stops,
mm.
But you know, when you want your keeper to come and just claim and take the pressure off, that's not him. And no. But with Gazzaniga, that looks like that is a bit of him. He's a bit of a 6-yard box man. He'll come and get it, and take the sting out of the game, and yeah, we get up the pitch and hopefully learn to kill a game off. I spoke to Rodney very briefly about the Inter Milan game, and he would have been my choice to go over and play against Inter.
I think there's a lot of people's choices, to be fair. Yeah.
And you know, and the discussion was, is it too soon? Is it too bigger atmosphere? But do you know what? 3,000 fans following you, right behind you, they'll give you the support. You know, we have the fans that moan and the keyboard warriors, but the ones that are travelling to, you know, Milan and Barcelona, they're the ones who are going to be behind you. They're the ones who are going to support you, properly support you, because they're going to have a good day out and they want a good result. You know, so I thought that was the time for him, really. And when you look at that last goal, or the killer goal over there, does he come and get it? I think he does. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's good to see him coming through, and I would persist with him from now on. He'd be my number two over Vorm. No plan that is ours. No
plan that is ours. Okay, so now it's time to discuss the Carabao Cup match that we have this week against Watford, being played at the MK Don Stadium. Firstly, your thoughts on the stadium, the fact that we're playing there. Do you think it's going to have much of an effect? I suppose we're used to playing away from home now, aren't we, after the past year?
We're homeless. every day's an away game at the moment, I suppose. I think, you know, it's one of those. It's almost a neutral. It's a neutral venue. So Watford going to turn up the same way. You know, we're just going to turn up the way we have been doing, you know, for the last six or seven games this season. So I don't think it'll affect the players too much. It's quite a nice stadium. It's actually quite a decent pitch. I've played on it myself, actually. So it's, I think it will work in our favour this time. And I'd like to see the fans get up and get themselves down there if possible. I know the prices are quite decent. It's a capacity of about 30,000, so a good chance to get down there and get behind the boys, really. So I don't think it'll affect our lads.
No.
I think we'll just pack our bags and travel wherever.
And then in terms of lineup, obviously, you know, people go crazy about us still needing a trophy. This is a trophy to be won. You know, what kind of team do we put out? I mean, I'm assuming probably Watford are going to put a weakened team, because it seems to be the done thing now to put weakened teams out for the Carabao Cup. So if they're going to play a weakened team, then are we going to rest Kane? Are we putting, is it Llorente time once again?
I think Potts goes Llorente. I would probably at this point be a little bit more controversial and start with Kane. I don't like this Kane coming off the bench to save us. I'd rather just put the game out of reach and then rest him, then disappear. I'm up for a few changes, but not as many as others would like to see. I'm one that I think we're now at a point, and I think it's quite essential to the current squad, where we try our best to put a trophy on the cabinet. We've done this whole stadium thing, and I know we're not quite there yet, and it is going to be amazing. And the guys are going to want to play in it, and they are getting paid relatively okay. It doesn't stop the others, you know, kind of getting a bigger payday. And usually the ones that are paying the bigger money, i.e. City, you know, they are going to come and take those players, and they are going to be in the hunt for trophies, because they're just going to have ridiculously stronger squads. So, you know, why not let's invest in it for once and just go. I mean, we've done all right the last couple of seasons. We slipped up against Liverpool that one season. I thought we had a decent chance then. And I think, cast my mind back to the FA Cup last year, the one against United. And that hurts. And that hurts a little bit. Sure. So for me, I would like to see probably like a very similar lineup to Saturday. Maybe swap the fullbacks. I'd leave Oyer and Davis. Maybe Dier and Sanchez at the back. Go with Winks and Dembele in there. Lamella starts. Probably wouldn't rush Ali back just yet. And start with Kane, with a view to maybe Llorente coming on. But I think it's time that we just chase one a little bit. And I think it shuts a lot of people up. You know, not necessarily opposition fans, but it's nice for these boys to actually put a medal in their pocket as well.
It does seem to be that, you know, the thing that everyone talks about with Tottenham nowadays, isn't it? It's like, if we want to keep the players, we have to have a trophy, no matter what happens. I just find that I don't think Poch prioritises this trophy. I think when you say trophy to him, he thinks sort of Premier League, Champions League. The national cups, I don't think are a massive attraction to him.
Look, I'm happy to be a little bit, you know, controversial and say, are we going to win the Premier League? Not this season. Are we going to win the Champions League? Not this season. So we can aim to finish top four, no problem. We can aim to get out of our group, for sure, in the Champions League. And then it's, you know, just like last season, every dog has its day. We can turn up and play with the best of them when we all turn up. So there's nothing wrong when we get into the knockout stages. Can we win an FA Cup and a Carabao Cup? We should be.
Sure, of course.
We should be. We have a squad capable of winning one of those cups. So, you know what? Let's go and put one in the cabinet, shut a lot of people up, give some of these boys a medal to put on their, you know, on their mantelpieces, and we go into a new stadium, we go in there with a trophy. Who cares what trophy is at this point? It just stops a lot of negativity that's following us around at the moment. So, for me, yeah, let's go and have a go. Let's have a crack.
We get our day out at Wembley. We've not been there for a while.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So, Hackney Lee, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I agree with Lee, absolutely. Got to have a trophy. I don't care what the trophy is. Carabao Cup, Milk Cup, League Cup, whatever you want to call it these days. But for me, I just think we've got a good enough squad to be able to play in this competition and win it. You know, I agree. I don't think we're going to win the Champions League this season. I don't think we're going to win the Premier League. So FA Cup, Carabao Cup, I'm happy with either of those. Because fans remember trophies. Tottenham are always pushed out with, you ain't won a trophy for so long, you ain't won a trophy for so long. They don't say that to Liverpool, or they don't say that to West Ham and all those teams. They say it about us. But the fans enjoy that. The fans enjoy the silverware. It's not so much for the club. The club don't care whether we win the Carabao Cup. It don't mean nothing to them. But to the fans, it means a lot. You know, to have a bus parade through the town, That's what you want. That's where memories are, you know. I was lucky enough to be at FA Cup finals and see us win it. And that's, for me, that'll live with me forever. You know, and the younger fans who ain't had that opportunity, that's what they want. That's what they go and pay their money for. So for me, strong team, absolutely.
So strong team. So Kane starting as well?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think if we started with Kane, with a view of him getting a goal or so and then coming off, I think would be a good thing. I think he does need a bit of a break. Me, I'd have Lamella and Moura on for that attacking pace. I disagree about Ali. I think depending on how he's doing in training, if he's feeling fit enough, I'd have him in. But I'd have, this might be a bit controversial, I wouldn't have Eriksen. I think Eriksen has been real lightweight over the last, I mean, he gets a bit of stick last season about pulling out of tackles and stuff, but this season he's been quite poor at that, gets knocked off the ball quite easy. So for me, I think maybe he needs a bit of a break. So getting Ali in there, I think would be the other thing. And the other one I would go for, who I think deserves a chance, is Walker Peters. I don't think we've seen enough of him. He's had a couple of chances and he's come across really, really well. And I think it's about time he got a bit of a run in the team where he can. And cup competitions is a place for that for me.
I really like Walker Peters. I think he's class. And I think, yeah, I completely agree. I think he should be given more game time. I would play him probably over Aurier, personally. But obviously, Poch doesn't seem to agree.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time, Hackney Lee, all the way from Dorset, through the wonders of modern technology. We'll catch up with you at a game sometime soon, and we'll definitely get you on again. But thanks for being part of the show, and I hope to speak to you again soon.
Yeah, no worries. I hope it all goes well for you. Good luck with your endeavours. I'll be at the Barca game and I'll be at the Cardiff game. The next one's on that, so maybe I'll see you there.
Nice one. Cheers, thanks, mate. Take care.
Cheers. Catch you later. Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, so it's time to discuss the Huddersfield game this weekend. And on the other end of the line, we have Huddersfield fan Dan. Welcome, Dan.
Welcome. Thank you.
So firstly, you sound like you're actually a proper Huddersfield fan. So are you a born and bred? What's the Huddersfield fan nickname?
I'm not a born and bred Terry, unfortunately.
Terry, that's it.
My side of the family were born all being Leeds fans for their sins. So I became a Huddersfield fan in probably 2002. I think I was 11 years old. My cousin got me into them. But now I've converted my dad is now a season ticket holder, and my sister. So ever since then, just been diehard blue and white. You know, since we were promoted from Division 3 in 2003, playoff final, we we've had three, not scored any goals, but won every single playoff. So that's a pretty good record. I used to work for the club in 2012 when I finished my degree. I worked in the retail department. And obviously Premier League last season, I think I went to about 26, 27 games. I was living down here in London and got all the away games south of Birmingham and got up when I could.
Great, great. And so what are your sort of thoughts on the current Huddersfield team at the moment? How do you think you're performing this season and your thoughts and hopes for the season?
Well, I think when I looked at pre-season, the players that we got in quite nice and early, I thought we'd improve the squad. But I had a couple of outgoings, Tom Ince going to Stoke. It didn't quite hit the heights that we might have expected in last season. Players like Michael Heffley obviously were important in getting us up. The thing we missed last season and this season is goals. It still is. And what we looked to try and get was more service into players like De Potra and Mounier. Because if you get the service to them, they're going to score the goals. And it was proven last season when we did manage to do it. And we brought in players from Monaco. We got Diakabi and Mbenza. And, you know, still with Kachunga and Van La Parra, well, we still haven't got that service into the strikers. And that's still our main problem this season is scoring goals.
He looks quite slow to me, De Potra. He had that chance on Saturday where I thought he could have maybe bagged it, but it was just the movement was just a little bit lacking.
Yeah. Well, apparently over last Christmas, he lost, I think it was a stone and a half of weight, so he's lost a bit of his timber, but he's the type of striker that you play off. The thing is, they can't play together. Whenever they brought him on, it's not worked. You play De Potra up front or you play Mounier up front, but they're both very similar target men. One of them prefers it on the floor. And Mounier saw a stat today. I think he had 9.5 headers average a game, which is the highest in the league. It says a lot about his prowess in the air, just not getting the right types of ball into him. And like you say, De Potra is not quick enough to turn Maguire, which he actually did last season, to be fair, when he scored at home. But we don't have that quick kind of play. You know, someone who's playing off a big man, like Liverpool used to do in it.
And so
early noughties with Heskey and Owen, you know, we don't have that kind of formation.
And so what are your thoughts on the season? What are your hopes? Obviously you're one of the favourites for relegation along with Cardiff. Do you think you're going to be able to stay up? Do you think you've got the firepower to make it?
See, this is the thing. Last year we were favourites to go down as well, and we defied the odds there. And something that we've been missing this season so far is that little bit of fight, that identity that we had last year and the season going up. And if you'd asked me at the start of the season, after the pre-season we had, which I think was quite positive, was that we could stay up again. And now, I don't think it. I still believe it and I still hope it. But it's where I'm seeing the goals coming from. It's what matches are we going to get results from? And I think compared to last season, we've probably averaged around the same in terms of the games we've played. Leicester City away last season, we lost. Everton, we'd lost, but we got a draw this time. So it's just the start that we've made. I still think that we're going to get a good patch, but it's when that first win's going to come. And it's for me, it's not going to happen at Spurs at the weekend. And then we got Liverpool the game after at home. Games against Burnley, you know, they don't have a great start to the season, but it's just looking where those wins and points are coming from. And last season, I think we did get lucky towards the end playing Chelsea and Man City, but we just sat missing that fight that we had last season.
How good is Aaron Moy, Dan? If you go, you've been a few times, see him up close.
I'm looking to be part of the Southern Terrier group, and we sponsor Aaron. And he's a fantastic player, probably one of the best technical players has been in the township since I've been a town fan. But he's not been as positive as he was in the championship. His footballing brain is incredible, but he's a lot slower. He's not put those passes through which players like Alex Pritchard have done in the past, and he hasn't obviously had the chance to do it this season. But he is a fantastic player on his day, and he's proven it many, many times. It goes through him just like it does for for Newcastle with Jonjo Shelvey. When the ball gets played to Aaron Moyes, pulling the strings, you know, he's got players like Hogg behind him or Williams, who's doing the dirty work. But this season, and particularly towards the end of last season, Moyes had to do a bit of that as well. So that part of his game has improved, but we've lost that creative spark that he had in the Championship.
Yeah, because I feel like he's quite integral to the success or the goals and chances that you create. I feel a lot goes through him. He's obviously a talented player.
Mm. Yeah, he is. I mean, it's one of my favorites. It's one of my shirts up here. I just think he's not hit the heights that he did when he was in the Championship. Whether that's because he's going away playing for Australia, which obviously it's a long place for him to travel to and from, particularly towards the start of the World Cup when they were playing a couple of qualifiers. And he did look jaded last season towards the end. But he's had to adapt a little bit to the way that we're playing now with the back five, because we're playing with either Hogg and Moy or Billing and Moy in front of them. And there's just, because we're not playing Pritchard in behind Mooney or Depotra, it's up to them to kind of control everything. But there's two of them there. There's no space for them to really work. So it's down to the wing backs. And if there's no supply to them or the wingers, then we're just not going to create any chances. And it's where it started this season. He's not had enough chances to think. The chance he had against Crystal Palace is the first one I think I can recall him having this season.
So your thoughts on Tottenham as a team at the moment, Dan?
Tottenham, I think, and I've got a bit of a soft spot for Tottenham. I particularly liked them when, in 2008, I think when they won the League Cup. They had a fantastic side, Lendi King, Defoe, Keane, Berbatov. And they had a fantastic side last season. I just think, and I think many Spurs fans would agree with me, is it a mistake that they haven't managed to bring in some squad players, at least, you know, because the likes of Kane and Eriksen are playing week in, week out. And you just got to think, have they played too much football, you know, after the World Cup? And they're just not as sharp as they were last season. The thing is, the games that they have lost, I think was the one against Liverpool and Milan recently. You know, they're good teams, you know, so when they come up against Huddersfield, if they don't play at their best, I still think they're going to get the chances and put them away because of the quality they've got, particularly last season. I mean, we played you away from home and it was sun, you know, rather than anyone else, that just tore us apart. So there's not one player that you have to say, oh, it's Harry Kane carries the team, you have to rely on his goals. You don't. You've got six or seven goal scorers from midfield to Harry Kane himself.
And so what's your predictions for the game then? What do you think the score is going to be?
Try not to be too pessimistic, but I think it's going to be at least, I'd say 3-1 Spurs. I think we might be able to nab a goal just like we did this weekend. But I can't see it. Last season, that was a turning point for me with Spurs. We attacked for 20 minutes and it looked like we were actually going to give him a good game. And I think it was Chris Love made a mistake in defence, let Harry Kane in, and Harry Kane does what Harry Kane does, scores the goal. I mean, he tore us apart that game anyway. But I think Wagner then decided that, oh, we're not going to attack these big boys, any of the top six. We can't afford to attack them. They're just going to destroy us. And ever since then, he's played this defensive mindset against those big six. And it had worked against Chelsea and Man City last season. But it was so frustrating going away from home, you know, spending any money to see him put an effort in and then just seeing kind of possession football but playing with a back five. I mean, we've got a good defence. We have got good defenders and we can keep teams out. But we're not Leicester City. We can't play on that counter-attack because we're not playing these players with the pace. And the question remains whether they're good enough anyway because we haven't seen them.
What's your prediction then, Lee? What are you thinking?
I actually agree with Dan. 3-1 is 3-1 is my predicted scoreline. So, unfortunately, I think we may leak a goal. However, yeah, I think we're I think we'll hit three. I think Harry's just finding his feet again, and he had two good performances against Huddersfield last season. So yeah, I'm gonna agree with Dan. Sorry, Dan.
Okay, I'm gonna go 2-0.
No, I agree.
I think we're gonna go 2-0. I don't think they've got the firepower, and I think we're gonna have a solid defensive display, and another 3 points hopefully. Perfect. All right. Thanks so much, Dan, for coming on, buddy. And we appreciate it. And best of luck for the rest of the season.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Best of luck to you as well.
Cheers, Dan.
Cheers, mate. Take care.
Cheers.
So we had some sad news this week to hear of the passing of Chas Hodges from Chas and Dave fame, an absolute Spurs legend and icon, and he will be sorely, sorely missed. Some fantastic Tottenham songs that they did over the years. They were really amazing, amazing people. And whenever they did appear at White Hart Lane, they were always so much fun and had such good stories to tell. And I know they were really, they involved themselves a lot with the club, and they did a lot of nights where they would speak to loads of fans, and they were great ambassadors, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. And I've seen an interview last season at the, or the season before the farewell to White Hart Lane, and rumour has it from the horse's mouth that literally 50% of their songs contain reference to Tottenham. So,
brilliant.
At some point. So, yeah, absolute legends. And, a big miss. It's going to be a big miss.
Absolutely. So there is a demand for trying to get the Chas and Dave song, Ain't No Pleasing You, to number one. So what we're going to try and do is we're going to try and get them number one, which would mean they would be the number one for the 4th of October. So if you can, please do download it on iTunes or any of the music players that you use, or if you just stream it on Spotify or anything like that, then it will still hopefully get them to number one for the 4th of October. So Ain't No Pleasing You, and do it for Chas. So that's all from this week. Hope you've enjoyed the show. Please, as always, do share it on all of the platforms as you can. We have our Facebook and Twitter handles. We're on Instagram and obviously on YouTube. It's TTILM Show, or The Thing I Love Most Show. And we will see you next week, hopefully with a cup victory and 3 points in the bag. Come on, you Spurs.